Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 15 of Rewrap Podcast, where we talk about all things photo, video, mobile, and the creative lifestyle. My name is Jaren Schneider, and joining me as always is my partner in crime, Karamin Dragooman.
Hello, Jaren. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Today was a good day. Today was a busy day. This whole couple weeks have been busy for me, actually.
You are a very busy man to get hold of, hey. But we get you for the podcast.
Yeah, and you know what? You had a busy weekend, too. You had some fun out at Bottle Rock, right?
I did. I got to see quite a few different bands I've always wanted to see, and I was blown away by Snoop Dogg. So if you ever get to see Chancey Snoop Dogg in concert,
Did he go by Snoop Dogg again? I thought he changed his name to Snoop Lion.
Perhaps branding and money, you know, goes back to Snoop Dogg. But he threw down an incredibly entertaining set. And if anything I love is that entertainers who love to entertain for the sake of entertainment. And he did exactly that, and he was amazing.
Well, that's good to hear. I like artists who are really good in person. It makes me feel good about liking them.
Cool.
Yeah. All right, so let's start with something that was just announced, just happened. Phase One finally has a brand new camera series, and it's not just a brand new body. They're brand new backs, and they've updated Capture One, and they have two new lenses. So they just went all out and delivered the new XF system. So I kind of want to go over quickly some of this if it means anything to anyone looking to get into medium format. And as someone who's a humongous fan of the Pentax 645Z, and Karaminder is a shooter of the Leica medium format. What's the medium called there?
We call it the S system.
Okay. So we both love medium format.
Yes.
So we'll take, and I've shot phase one extensively actually, but I don't own a phase one system.
Not shot phase one, but I have lots of friends who do.
Yeah. I think phase one might be the most popular of the medium format systems that you find out there. It's phase and Hassie a lot.
Yeah, and I think phase is more aggressive in getting their cameras into different photographers' hands. They've tried with me. I'm pretty sure they've tried with you.
Yeah, and I mean I've tried a couple things with them, but being a predominantly video guy, it's hard to make this work all the time. But so let's talk about the XF system. So they're touting this as this, I'm going to use their words here, and I think this one's kind of weird, robust aerial grade mechanics. I don't really know what aerial grade mechanics means.
I'm not sure either. Isn't aerial grade mechanics something like, I don't know, pitch yaw and like old school computers that just work solidly on a plane and just make sure it doesn't crash?
If that's the case, then we want that. Advanced electronics, a brand new autofocus platform, thank the Lord in heaven for that. New modularity options, new software, and customizable touch controls. If you had ever shot on any of the current or former phase bodies, you will know what I mean by thank the Lord in heaven for a new autofocusing system, because it is so garbage on the current body. I really hate it. It is not reliable.
Yeah, Hasselblad introduced their, True Focus, a couple years ago, and I knew that. My buddy Peter Hurley at the time was shooting Hasselblad, and he was very happy about it. He used to only be a manual focus shooter, and so then he adopted it and started using it a bit more, but he's still mostly manual focus when doing headshots.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Something else that's kind of cool about this.
What's that, Jaren?
It has a built-in Profoto flash trigger. So they are...
Oh, interesting. They're in cahoots.
Right.
They're in cahoots, Jaren.
I believe the word, the technical term, is cahoots.
That's right.
They're in there deep. That's a long-term relationship right there. You don't just put that in a body. That's thinking way down the road. So it has two touchscreens as well. So you know where you usually have the LCD, it shows you on a DSLR what your settings are. It's up on the top by the grip.
That's a touchscreen?
That's a touchscreen.
Why is that a touchscreen?
Maybe, I don't know. I just know that it is one.
What happened to the good old-fashioned, where my hand is placed, that is where the controls should be? And
are controls there, actually.
Yeah, I see the
wheels and buttons.
And then I guess you get one by your index finger and another one by your thumb. Yeah. And you have your shutter.
I don't know what you control from there, but what's the point of something?
I guess it's for those who just, I don't know how useful something like that is. I just don't know.
Well, I don't know what it does, so I'll have to find out. Maybe I could tap that and I can tell it where above or below, perfect lighting I want it to be, rather than using dials. I don't know. You're right. It's kind of weird.
But you know what it does allow for, Jaren? I feel like this is a little bit of mirrorlessization of a medium format system where, we're GH4 users and shooters, so we are used to being able to have all the controls of the camera, controlled physically, but mostly we can actually whip out an iPhone, connect to it via Wi-Fi, and manage all the settings that way and shoot it that way, right?
And you can do that with this one.
Yeah,
now.
And you cannot do that in the past, right?
No.
So that's
no.
So I think that's makes more sense to me, understanding of, okay, fine, you put a touchscreen in there, and now we're just, you know, reading those settings and seeing those. Okay. Yeah. But what I like, Jaron, before I push you or continue, is that the back is a new touchscreen interface, mm-hmm. right? You want to say mm-hmm. anything more about it?
It's probably going to be a lot better than the current one. Like, the current one does have a touchscreen. It's just to say it's dated is accurate. It's pretty dated.
Would you feel it was introduced as a gimmick at first, and now they just refined it and made it better?
Yeah, that would I'd buy that. I don't know if it was a full on gimmick. It does work. You do use it to, like, you double tap to zoom, but I think that this one's going to actually show better the quality of the images you're getting. Like, you couldn't really tell on the back of the Phase.
Yeah, and I think back of LCDs on cameras for a long time just don't tell you the truth, and so any photographer worth their salt is always tethered shooting. I don't see anyone really whipping around Phase 1.
The rear of the Pentax 645Z is quite good. So that,
ooh, that's good to know.
That this is kind of like trying to keep up with that is that it's both those screens. And now the thing that would really separate this is if the processor and the way that the firmware works and interacting with the camera is snappy no matter what. Some of the things I've found when shooting with these larger megapixel cameras is they get bogged down with the amount of data they have to write.
Oh, yes. I have a first generation Leica medium format, and it definitely
bogs.
When we're dealing with the images, yeah, even getting the images, like moving, shuffling them around. When they came out with the version 2, all they did was add a second processor, and it vastly improved everything. All they did is everybody's going to throw another processor in there, same price.
So one of my problems with the Canon 50 megapixel 5DS and 5DSR mm-hmm. is that it's a little slow. It felt slower than shooting with the Pentax, which felt slow too. So this is good to know that they've increased the speed. I want to see it firsthand, but... the main thing I want to see in action is their new Honeybee autofocus platform, the HAP-1. And they say it is designed with a custom processor and high-resolution CMOS AF sensor that combines a unique floating-point architecture and fully programmable interface. So that's not to say that the backs are CMOS. It's that the sensor on this that's dealing with the autofocus is using a CMOS sensor. So there's two things going on inside of this thing. It's not just the sensor that records the image on the back. There's stuff going on in the body.
That is interesting.
That's one of the things that I understand is special about Phase.
Yeah.
Is that there's the relationship between the body and the back, and the fact that it's both of them are doing things simultaneously a lot of the time.
It's a complex system, but hopefully it's working well for them. What I do like, Jaron, about this is that they have three different viewfinder modules.
So all the viewfinder options are whatever you like, and I think there's two. There's just the standard prism one, and then there's the one that looks like a lot like the original Hasselblads, where you held down by the waist and you look down.
That's cool.
That one is an option. They have three backs. And the backs, in terms of what they can do from a strictly image standpoint, is not really any different than what we were used to seeing from them. They have an 80, 60, and 50 megapixel back. The CMOS back is the 50 megapixel one. The two others are CCD. And they can be left open for an exposure of 60 minutes, which is, I think, the first time that's ever happened, except for on the original IQ1 50 megapixel. It could be left open for 60 minutes. But it can do a 60-minute exposure on all three of these backs now, which is nifty.
So basically, like, long exposure photography, longer than 2 minutes, I should say, is now coming to Phase.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they also have two new lenses, the 120 and the 35mm. And what I found was interesting is that these lenses have been tested to resolve on 100-megapixel backs, 100-megapixel sensors. So, one, my question is, well, when are we getting this 100-megapixel thing? And two, what are you testing that on? Because clearly you have one. If you know it resolves past 100, don't you have to test it on something?
You know how the Hasselblad does the whole sensor shift thing to get more megapixels? Do you think that technology would translate with the high resolution lenses? I mean, none of these sensors do, or none of this Phase stuff does sensor shift. Only the only ones I know of, the Hasselblad, and I think the new Olympus OMD EM5 Mark II. There you go.
Yeah.
That's what I just want to get that out there. Sensor shift is where the sensor just moves itself, like a little micron to the left, a little micron down, and therefore stitches together an image of greater resolution than just the sensor allows. So if it's a, I don't know, 16 megapixel sensor, then it'll kick out a 40 megapixel.
When the H5D50C came out, I think I recall H5D50C. Reading that.
Yes, it does that. But it's not a moving image. Like, you can't shoot sports with it because right. people would move by the time the second shot came. Yeah, it has to be still life. Everything's still.
And I think that Phase 1 and Hasselblad are primarily designed for in-studio use. And
or
I would say that the
you could shoot landscapes, Sharon.
You could.
Yeah, that's outside.
So if you want to own one of these, you're going to have to be prepared to throw down at least $41,000.
That's it.
That is just the
kidding.
Cheapest
that's
option.
A lot of money. That's a lot of money.
That's the cheapest option for the camera. You get a camera, a lens, the 80mm lens, leaf shutter, and the back. And that's the XF IQ3 50 megapixel. Will be $40,000. The most expensive one is the 80 megapixel, and that's $49,000. So that's very Phase pricing. I'm nothing surprising there. That's what they usually cost.
Yeah, and most people in this area, when they do, like, they're not really spending that much, let's say $41,000. What they'll probably do is they'll trade in their gear and then pay the difference. And that's kind of how these, you know, commercial photographers kind of do that thing. Or they rent it if they need to. If they don't have
rent is big market for Phase and
Hasselblad. Yeah, so just guys, don't think that like in the photographic world, like, wow, these photographers must be making great money in deep pockets to be able to get stuff. not at all.
I mean, they definitely will. A lot of them will put that show on, but they didn't pay that much for their camera.
Or I'll be the first to admit, most of my stuff used. That's right, I recycle. I'm a Californian.
All right, so that's enough of a medium format. If you guys want to read more about that, there's a full rundown on resourcemagonline.com.
That's right.
Also, Karaman,
Jaren's excited about this.
Is a full breakdown of f-stop bags.
Yeah, what is that?
New line. And I just want to talk one specific thing about these new line of bags, besides the fact that they're very cool and they have a whole bunch of stuff. You should totally go take a look at them. But
wait, Jaren, before you start, I want to say, Jaren, this is totally your bag.
Ha ha. We need like a monkey to go to dunch.
Need a little pun thingy. No, but seriously, these are totally. You're very excited. But I'm happy that you're excited.
I like
about
bags.
This stuff.
I think that a good bag makes a really big difference when you're out shooting. If you don't have a good bag, you spend most of your time frustrated trying to look for things, or things break. All sorts of crap can go wrong. Mm-hmm. But one thing about these that I think is truly brilliant is that they made the exterior of these as waterproof as a rain cover. So a lot of bags you'll get right now will come with an exterior rain cover that you pull over it if you're going to get in someplace that's wet.
Yep.
These, you don't have to do that. You zip them up and they can withstand having water, heavy rain pour on them, and your stuff is safe. That is really cool. That deserves some accolades, and I really just wanted to spend 45 seconds putting a little bit of props to F-Stop bags, because that is a really cool innovation among several others they did in these new bags that is awesome. So really good job, guys. They're a small team out of, I think, St. Louis, and they rock.
Cool.
That's it.
And they look good.
They do.
They look cool. Okay. The next story is Google introduced, or reintroduced, I suppose, Google Photos as a service from Google I.O. About basically unlimited photo storage. Caveat. Right, Jaren? You want to explain what those caveats are?
Yeah. Caveat is basically the same as the Amazon one, which is you can't use it for commercial use. It's for personal use. Your pictures cannot be larger than 16 megapixel, and your video can't be higher than 1080. And that's it. And no RAW files.
Yep.
JPEGs. So I think what this was designed for was being the infinite repository for all of your phone photos, which I'm sure you don't do as much with as you wish. A lot of people take a ton of pictures on their phones and they either just sit there or one of the things that I had to constantly happen was your iCloud is full. So I have to go and do something else with them. So I tend to throw them in Dropbox. But the organizational method of Dropbox isn't fantastic. What Google Photos has is, Google Photos has an interface to it that is very friendly to organizing those photos, organizing them.
Yes, I've heard lots of positive buzz about the way that Google is organizing these photos. And I'm a little hesitant to kind of throw my photos at Google. I'm just not down with kind of, I don't know. I just know that with Google, I'm the product. And so if I throw my photos
free.
There,
But is it really free?
Exactly.
They are gaining something. They will gain something from you using their service.
It's like that. It's like that friend you have, Jaren, where, all right, I do you the favor, but when you come to collect a favor from me, I will be very worried or very scared about what it is that you're gonna collect. You know what I mean?
Like, what am I, the Godfather? Is Google the Godfather?
No, not necessarily the Godfather, but it's, I don't know. There's the word I feel is creepiness, and I feel it like shivering up my spine. I don't.
Some people feel that way about Apple. A lot of people feel that way about Facebook. Very, very, very rightfully.
Oh yeah, Facebook. Yes, Apple. I guess I trust because I pay them. Meaning, you know, I pay for iCloud. I pay for. I know that, okay, you're making money from me giving you money, not you're making money by maybe serving up my own pictures to me in an ad. Like, there's a great example. Like, if let's say I went to Disneyland, took pictures, and it's in Google Photos, and then there's an ad that comes up says, "Hey, why don't you plan a trip to Disney World this fall, and we'll give you a special coupon," and it's my photo, you know, advertised back at me. Not saying that you use my photo to advertise at you, but the whole point is personal.
Yeah, they're trying to hit your memory. They're trying to be like, look at how much fun you had last time.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, now you're messing my memories and you're mixing advertising in it. Well, we don't know if they're going to do this. This is what I foresee.
It's an idea. That's a great idea. If I was Google, I'd be like, that's a great idea, Caramander. Oh. I'm going to write that one down.
They're geniuses. I'm sure they have this and plenty of others just to get me.
Very much like Google, we won't see the fruition of these ideas for about 3 more years, but when we do, it'll be such a seamless transition we won't realize happened.
Or your pre-roll YouTube ad is actually your own video advertising back at you as well. Like, remember that time you went to Disneyland and you see all this happiness with kids, and like, we're like, oh, so emotional. You're showing me a picture of my kids having a great time at Disneyland, telling me to go. And it's my own. We all love looking at our own footage, right, Jaren? Like family, we do, and then we want to hit the skip button. Like, nope, don't want to see myself anymore, or don't want to see my kids anymore. It's a horrible thing to do. Skip your kids.
Man, you are just selling why this is such a good idea.
I'm getting so emotionally tied up into what I'm saying. Like, I'm actually experiencing it in my head.
While we're on the Google thing, so try Google Photos if you want to. Caramander if you want to.
But I'm part of me is just curious to know what's this magic sauce of their organization. I just want to know. Because, you know, we take a bunch of photos and organizing it is the, would you say it's the holy grail?
Yeah, there's been many, many attempts at making organization work. And basically all of them have either been iterations of the same thing or they failed. And it's about time somebody got it right. And we still don't know what that right is.
Yeah.
I think we want things to organize automatically while simultaneously not getting too personal into our lives, which is kind of hard.
Yeah, I think...
accidentally making our daughter labeled as food.
Well, yeah, that'll... I guess as AI gets smarter, it'll learn what is our daughter and what is not food. But actually, not in our list, Jaren, of stories to talk about, but part of this is Wolfram Alpha. Are you familiar with Wolfram Alpha?
No.
When you ask Siri, you know, a lot of times answers come back from Wolfram Alpha, like, you know, what is the half-life of carbon? I don't even know if that's true. No, I'm horrible at chemistry and biology. But the point is that when you ask certain technical questions, it goes to Wolfram Alpha. They're basically a huge, like, mathematics, hardcore math and hardcore, like, database of math.
Is that when it just tells me an answer and not says, I found this for you?
Sometimes it's I found this for you and it's formatted and presented to you on the screen. But the point is that they've now figured out how to, not completely, but they've started to finally show that they've been working on how to get a computer program to understand what's in a picture and to identify things. So like, okay, Eiffel Tower. Okay, human being. Food, if you will. So like simple, basic things. And then of course, you know, we already have in the latest Lightroom, and we've had this in iPhoto for a while, or even photos, matching people's faces and recognizing people's faces and grouping them together. So this way, instead of just automatic, the way I see this going down the line, Jaren, is automatic keywording. Like, okay, automatic keyword that this is. So we have our hopefully geotags.
You know that exists already, by the way. iFi, their iFi cloud does do that.
It does do
their
that.
Their new storage will be able to identify certain things as certain things automatically. And tag them automatically without having to do anything.
Did not know that.
So the tech already exists.
That's
good. It's already out there. It's just a matter of refining it.
Yeah, refine. Because right now there's some misses, but it's getting there. And I think that is good. Just hopefully it's just a company that I trust to look at those photos and not advertise them back to me.
Well, speaking of Google, we were looking at something that they and GoPro are working with, right? Like, it's the same concept, like they're working on this together.
I'm not sure if they're working on it together, because the at the Recode conference, when the, I think it's the GoPro CEO or someone from GoPro was being interviewed, they debuted a six camera, like 360, like a ball, like a little ball with six GoPros in it that you can capture, I guess, 360 video. And then the next day, Google comes out with a 16 GoPro array called the Google Jump 360 camera rig. And Jaren, you couldn't get the video to show up, but I did. And it's just showing an example video of drifters going around the little, this little setup. Looks like a little UFO attached to a tripod. Captures video in 360 degrees. And so what you can do is you push play in this video, and then you can click and drag your mouse to spin it around. And I'm not with the whole interacting with video thing.
So I saw something, I can't remember the name of the company, but it was over at the LaCie booth at NAB, and they were showing just that. They had a video playing that was in 360 that I could explore as the video played. So it was a completely unique experience each time the video played, because wherever I moved it would, or whoever else moved it, isn't going to be the same as the person who moved it mm-hmm. before. Now the environment's not going to change, but how you perceive it can. And I thought it was cool in the sense of, that's a nice, you know, that's interesting. I don't know the implications of it yet. I think there are cool ways that you could possibly do it. And it would have to be, you create a story, you film the story, and you hide things in the story so that when, you know, if you didn't touch the camera at all and you just watched it from the perspective that we set the default at, you would get a story, but you would get more of one if you looked around and interacted with the scene to actually see what was going on around everyone else.
You know what you're describing, Jaren? You know what you're describing?
What?
First-person shooters.
A first-person shooter? I don't know if it's a first-person shooter, because in that sense, I'm not watching the person playing the first-person shooter mm-hmm. and also looking around at his or her environment and like maybe seeing an Easter egg somewhere that explains a part of the story from earlier, or if I had looked in the first minute at a certain corner of the screen, something that happened later would make more sense. So I'm seeing like a storytelling perspective here. Right now, I think I would agree with you that video shouldn't be interacted with in its current form because it's not complete. It's very gimmicky right now. But the first time somebody makes something beautiful with it, your mind will change. The same way mine did when you told me about taking photos and making videos with an iPhone.
That's true. I recall a time when in Disneyland, in Tomorrowland specifically, you went into this round room, and I believe there was footage of, they had this like kind of ring of cameras they set up on a hot air balloon, and it had screens around this room, and it felt, I mean, it didn't go from floor to ceiling, but it was just kind of the top part of the ceiling where you could see where you were going. And it was cool because like you're floating through and it's like, oh, that's cool. You're in the middle of this footage around and you can physically turn around and see it. And I think, remember when we played with the Oculus? We went to a hotel grand opening.
Yeah, that was sweet.
I think combining the Oculus with like watching it on a flat screen, you know.
I can see what you're saying. Yeah. I see where you're going already, and I'm definitely with you on that.
I see that, yeah, kind of next gen. I would love it to be, like, there's a difference between, say, watching a video and experiencing film, and then experiencing something like this, where this is an experience, and also recording with 3D sounds. So this way, with whatever the sound you're hearing, whether it be headphones or speakers in a room, and you turn and look, and you can kind of see it completely around you, and you are just immersed. There's that.
The Oculus, speaking just like as a side note, man, the Oculus Rift is both an awesome and terrifying concept. Like when I took those goggles off, it was a little bit spatially disorienting.
Oh, yeah.
Because my brain was no longer where it was.
Oh, yeah.
And man, it was cool and weird simultaneously. And it I don't know, it could, it's very Matrix-y.
It was, but it definitely is an experience that needs to be experienced that I can't even describe or tell you. So if you get the chance to play with it.
I think one more step to do it is if they put headphones on us and the headphones were giving us feedback from the environment we were in.
Oh, 3D sound? Then
it would have been even more weird to come out of it.
You know, we could do that. You know, I have that little 3D. I think you have it in my audio bag, right? A little 3D audio capture. 3D,
yeah,
3,
yeah, yeah.
It's called a 3DIO. And I believe you can get that at 3DIO.com. This little device which has human ears spaced at the right distance and has a stereo output. So you just plug it into your like Zoom H recorder, Zoom H1, Zoom H4, and hit record. And then you get a stereo track of what it sounds like to be in wherever you are in a 3D sound. So if you and you play it back, it sounds like you were in the same environment that the device that was recording in was in. And I actually think we're going to do something like this with maybe a podcast. We'll experiment with people who listen to podcasts in their headphones. It'll be like me and Jaren are sitting on opposite sides of you. Oh, man, like, weird. You know, one side is on, well, you know, angel on a shoulder, devil on the other shoulder type of thing.
I get to be the devil then, right?
Oh, I wanted to be devil. It's okay. I'll play angel. But yeah, it would be cool that we're actually talking to someone's ear left and right, and kind of you can hear us in the room.
Then the next step is to do video with this 3D 360 rig.
Yes,
and you could actually turn over and see us talking to you.
Yeah, so instead of like just listening to the podcast, you could
be part of it.
Be part of it, yes. But I would love this, Jaren, but really though, live. Imagine watching this, or this was live. So this meant that, I'm trying to think.
Facebook was toying with this concept a little while ago where they were going to put, that's why they bought Oculus, was because they want the idea of making, they'll put like a camera with a 360 rig on it in the front row seat of like the Wimbledon, and you could put an Oculus on and be there.
Oh, and then live. Have you, and you know, tilt your head left and right as the ball goes back and
look
forth.
Around you in live. Now, and everyone can be doing that and looking at different views at the same time of the same situation live. That is, I think, the dream.
You know what's really interesting is when I started this story, I was like, I don't with interactive video. And then as we've been talking and developing like this Oculus and the different possibilities of this type of technology, now I'm really excited, Jaren. I've changed.
Yeah, weren't excited about the concept of like flipping a mouse around on a flat screen and looking.
Nope,
around.
Not at all.
That, I agree, doesn't have the abilities that I think where this is really going, the real point of all of this. So I'm glad that you're now like your eyes are opened and you're ready to accept.
I think it's
the
exciting.
New 3D 360 overlords.
I think it's a little. I still feel it's very niche. Like it's not going to be out everywhere. Like I don't know.
I'd
like
say we're about 5 to 8 years out.
Yeah, but it is. It is interesting because it offers a very unique experience. That's my take on it. That's my final.
All right, if that's your final, then we'll move on. And yes. This is a subject that I came up with very last minute, and I've just been thinking about it, and some interactions people I know and some interactions with people that I know personally are having with other photographers who have turned into, like, bosses. So a photographer who gets so successful that they open their own studio and then hire people, and those people now work for that photographer. Mm-hmm. And I think that generally speaking, there are always exceptions, but generally speaking, photographers who have been doing the job for a long time generally make absolutely horrible bosses.
Yeah, and we're not going to throw anyone under the bus here. We're not going to name
absolutely
names.
Absolutely not.
But
the whole point of this is just to say, like, if you become successful and you then hire a staff, be aware that this can happen. And the reason I think it happens is because photographers spend so many years, day after day, working for themselves with their goals and their business and everything they want to do at the forefront, that turning that off and suddenly now turning around and realizing that it's not all about you anymore, it's now about these people who depend on you, is really hard for them. And they don't, one, realize they need to do it, or two, are able to do it. So they continue to be, the word is selfish. And there's nothing wrong with being selfish if you're going to be a successful photographer. You need to do that in order to be successful. Mm-hmm. You have to think about yourself. But the second you involve someone else in your business, you can't be that way anymore. So remember that when you think about this. You think I'm on the right track here, Cameron? Does that sound like a good reason why someone would be that way?
This actually kind of harkens back to I don't know if some of you guys are in the startup community or know about the startup community, but there's a gentleman named Paul Graham who does Y Combinator. And in July 2009, he wrote this little blog post called Maker Schedule, Manager Schedule. And it's basically the gist is, you know, maker versus manager. Maker could be a coder, you know, basically an artist in our words. And then manager is the kind of the business side of things. it kind of speaks, at least I feel like it echoes back to what you're saying, is this, you have two worlds, and trying to balance both is tricky, and only I think a few people in the world kind of get, not a few people, but a smaller percentage of people who are artists or even managers that swap roles get into. I've seen it as well, and I'm lucky enough that I have people who are aware that they're that way. And then I was thinking of someone who can do this well, and the only person I can think of is I don't know too closely, but I feel that Chase Jarvis is a great positive person who is doing things well enough that from our outside perspective, stuff looks like it's going well. Creative Live, at his own commercial mm-hmm. photography stuff, mm-hmm. and I've met the guy. He's such a nice guy.
Super cool dude. I met him at a DJI event last year, and yeah, he was sweet. He's a nice guy.
Yeah.
I just if you ever get successful, don't let yourself get blinded by continually. Yeah, just like it's not all about you anymore.
Yeah, you have to become now a business person, and you represent yourself as a brand or an entity, not just yourself. And you have to mind the people around you. You have to basically become from maker to manager. You have to manage the people around you.
That's a tough transition.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot of people.
And I'm the one that went, I've always been, I guess, riding that line between manager and maker. And I've spent probably a lot more of my life playing manager than I have maker. But I always feel the management part of me is like, all right, it's good. It's all right. I can always do a little better, but I'm doing good. And I always feel like the maker part of me is always not necessarily catching up, but I feel like there's still more of a vast ocean out there for me to get my toes wet and do things.
I feel exactly the same way. Mm. One of those rare occasions where Karaminder and I share a feeling and an opinion.
Shut up! No way.
No, yeah, we agree on
that. Okay, yeah, we should clink beers to that one.
All right, so I promised we were going to do this. I may have missed it by a week or 2 weeks, but many episode ago, Karaminder purchased an Apple Watch. And yes, I said, we are going to check in every few weeks for the next year. And I'm going to ask you over and over again, Karaminder, how do you feel about that purchase of that Apple Watch? So this is the first check-in since the purchase. This the purchase like a month ago?
April 24th is when it was delivered to me. I know, because that was my birthday.
Okay, so it's been well past what I intended, which was every 4 weeks. So it's been like 5 or 6 weeks.
It's been 5 weeks.
But that's okay. Karaminder, how do you feel about your Apple Watch?
I feel... This part you have to cut out because I'm trying to collect my thoughts. Hold on.
I'm definitely not cutting that out.
Clap, clap. No clap. You have to do
it. No, I'm keeping that. All that's going in.
I'm trying to just build up some tension because you guys think like, oh, will he like it or won't he like it? And then if any of you have been paying attention when I do talk about like little things, I get very giddily excited about it. And I am still loving it. Absolutely. Especially, oh my God. Like I was at a 3-day festival at Bottle Rock this weekend. And that place like that is loud. And also there's hardly any, oh God, so many people. So it's like, you know, you can't even get data. Like I was trying to Snapchat
the
and publish.
Was slammed.
Oh yeah. And they had the little temporary cell sites and things like that. But it's still slammed. I couldn't upload any of my snaps. I mean, you guys know I love to Snapchat when I'm outside. And what's convenient is, you know, trying to coordinate with other people around you, trying to find each other. I got every single alert, every single call. It, you know, showed up on my wrist. I knew that I could whip out my phone and reply back. I had no trouble being contacted. And some people maybe not like that. But in a situation like that where I'm just trying to rely on my technology for better communication in a place, it's awesome. I use it. I also have now an extra 2 more bands. So I had the Milanese band at the beginning. I've now got the Black Rubber Sport.
That is to say, he went out and he purchased 2 more bands in the last 2 weeks.
And,
I've seen him wear a different band every time I've seen him now. He's
and
mixing it up.
Today, I'm actually wearing the new Link band, which is the most expensive band available. It's almost the price of the watch itself, actually. But my previous watch had a Link bracelet, and I really enjoy it. And you know what's really nice, Jaren, is having these 3 different bands. I can kind of... It does feel like almost having 3 different styles. Whereas before I had multiple watches to match my outfit, now I just choose the different band to go with my watch. And I like that. I really like that. And everything's very consistent. It's like, how can I describe it? It's like having, you understand like the dashboard metaphor that Mac OS X has, where you kind of, swipe to the left of your desktop and you have all these little widgets that are available. So it's not like a full app, but it's like these little things that do things quickly, like maybe tell you the weather, what are your latest stocks are doing, or even tracking a UPS package or packages, or having a little calculator, or a lot of people have little sticky notes or little clocks from different parts of the world so they know what's going on. It's a bit like that on your wrist. So everything from quickly summoning an Uber to just where I am. If I'm taking a shower and my phone is playing music near the sink, I can, like, I don't like this song. Let's go to the next song on Spotify. Let me raise the volume up because now that the shower's on, I can't really hear it, but I can adjust the volume from my watch. So pump up the volume. And if my phone is connected to a Bluetooth speaker, which often it is, then I can control that too. Now listen to podcasts when I'm taking a shower. You know, washing this hair, I kind of got to spend some time.
A lot about showering. You must shower a lot.
Yes, I do. Work out a lot and then I have to shower and I have to wash my hair. And
so basically,
try and be inefficient with my time. But also, wait, Jaren, still more. There's still more.
He really loves this thing.
The fitness part of it. I definitely feel like it's, I've been also trying to get more fit. And I'm definitely with the whole, I think it's an ingenious design of what they've done with the whole designing these three rings, and you can quickly glance at like your status, like looking at a watch, and I can quickly understand where I'm lacking in terms of like not enough exercise or not enough calories moving around, not enough like making sure to stand up and not sit down too continuously. Unfortunately, I'm sitting down continuously for this podcast. I do have to change that. I do want to kind of redesign things so I can maybe even do the standing. I have to sell my old watch. I have to do that. I have to sell it and not have it anymore.
Now that is surprising because you really like that
I do really like it. I bought that for myself as a gift. It's the Braun. And I bought that myself as a gift 2 years ago for my birthday. And it was my first like, you know, big investment into a grown-up watch. And I love that watch. And I've worn it like every day since then. And the thing is, I wear this watch more frequently. The watch is on me more than that watch used to be. Because I only used to put that watch on when I go outside. So right now, as I'm talking to you, if I'm inside the house, chilling, working, then, yeah, exactly like you. You haven't put on a watch.
Watches on right now.
You have no need for it.
My watch is in my watch box because I'm not leaving the house. I got a clock right here.
Yeah. So like this weekend when I'd wake up, I was hungry and I didn't want to get ready yet. So I put on my watch first and then the robe and then go downstairs and make something quickly to eat. So like the watch is on me.
So what
quite
you're
a lot.
Saying is it's invaded your life more in the past.
Invaded
five
is such
weeks.
A bad word though. Invaded. Okay, it's more like my phone's upstairs charging cause it needs to charge for the festival. And then I'm downstairs. But if I get texts and alerts, I still get them because we're all on the same Wi-Fi network.
So you're saying it invaded is wrong. How about it's infected? It has
no, infection is such a bad word, Jerry.
Okay. Everyone gets the idea. He likes it more. So this wrap up, meaning we were at maybe like a base level of 8 of his like scale.
I never said that.
I'm just giving one. So okay. Let's say he was at happiness level 8. Now he's at happiness level 10.
11.
Like it keeps going high.
11.
Okay. Turn it up to 11.
11. Yes. so I was excited we'll about it back then. I'm even more happy with it now that I have more bands. It definitely feels more like, I don't know. Like words can't describe. Like words escape me.
You're clearly very excited about this. Yes. More excited about this than I was about a waterproof backpack.
I can't wait for more photography stuff. You're still excited about that. I still can't wait for more photography stuff to just get with it. Like, you know how like the latest phase camera we just announced now that has Wi-Fi controls. I would love then fine put out an app, have Apple Watch support with it too, so I can tweak things from it. If I don't know what things I would need to tweak, mostly just maybe lighting settings. I've talked about that previously. That would be a great thing to do. But what else?
It could be I like still a, feel... a link to your pro photo, so that since the transceiver is built into that camera, how are you? I don't know how you control like the light power, which you can from the pro photo thing. So maybe you could do.
They would sort it out. They would sort it out. But the idea is that make it so that I can adjust lighting stuff, lighting ratios, lighting power from my watch and select different things. That would be brilliant. I still feel, however, certain apps still need to be. You don't need a lot of apps on the watch. I'm not using a ton of them either. Maybe the Apple Remote for my Apple TV, Uber, and just the standard stuff that already came with the watch. But nothing like there's a credit card app. I have used Apple Pay quite a lot. I've used Passbook on my watch to get on flights and handle all that. Used it to pay for food at Petco, which is cool. And it's just more convenient, and I enjoy that. And I just want more things around me to be able to be used, to be able to use it.
Oh man, I don't know that world where Kiraminder is connected to everything from his wrist is terrifying.
Not necessarily connected to everything, just more useful, like being able to pay for stuff and leave my wallet at home.
Gotcha. Okay, we're gonna leave behind this Apple Watch check-in. Thank you, Kiraminder, for the details on why you still love it so much, even more so than before.
You know, actually,
check in with you again in another month.
Last thing, number one question I get when people find out that I have an Apple Watch. Number one question: do you love it? That's like not like, oh, that's cool, you know, ask another question. No, it's consistently, do you love it? So I think the stigma out there is that, you know, well, I'm not sure if it's going to work for me, I'm not sure, but I do believe it's a very personal device. Everyone use it in a slightly different way. Do I love it? Yes, I absolutely do.
So you still love it? Still loves it. All right, we're moving on. The last thing here is something you put on the list. Why don't you introduce it?
Yeah, I found this that was actually led, kind of pointed out to me, this photographer named is Guy Tao. He on Facebook, he put up this little blurb, which I quite really liked. Not necessarily a rant, but a little piece I want to share with you. I'm going to read it in full. Quote, "A distinction I do not particularly care to earn is award-winning. One of the most pervasive and harmful effects of competition is the mindset that it is more important to strive to be better than others by the arbitrary opinion of someone else than to simply make yourself into the best that you can be. It implies placing greater importance on how others perceive you than on the personal rewards of creative work. And to bind your perception of yourself to such opinions rather than to trust your own. In that sense, it is relinquishing control of your own self-worth and enjoyment of photography, handing it off to others for the small chance of a short-lived moment of fame." Period. End quote.
Amen. Hallelujah. I believe.
Yes.
Absolutely. How many awards do you have, Kiraminder?
What do you mean, how many awards? Sorry.
How many awards have you won?
Oh, how many awards have I won? I've won a grand total of naught, which is zero in American. Jaren, can you tell me how many awards you have won?
Oh, it's a big whopping zero.
Oh, whoa.
But you know,
another
I've
thing,
never entered any competition. I've never tried to get an award.
No, I've not tried to strive to be better than others as rated by an arbitrary opinion of other people.
And I think that's okay.
Yeah.
And I think that what he has to say about that is very, very true. Now, is there any problem with being an award-winning photographer? No.
Mm-mm.
But I think from this perspective, at least, there's no shame in not being one.
Exactly. Exactly. I have no shame in it. Jaren, you definitely don't have any shame that I can see whatsoever.
Yeah, I don't care.
In general.
Like, I have plenty of work. I'm very happy. I'm personally happy in the work that I do. And for me, I judge my own work, and I look at this, and I'm like, was that the best that I could possibly have done?
Yes, maybe. Competing
is
with yourself.
Is it the best that I want to do? So there's two differences. One is the best I could have done in that situation with who I am now. Yes. Is it the best that I could do in if I had just this little bit more of knowledge at the time? Is it the absolute best I could be? Probably not, and I'm going to continue to try and be better. So I don't even give myself an award for certain things. There's very few things where I feel like I can just sit back 7 or 8 months later and be like, yeah, that is still perfect, because I still think that I've learned so much through working that everything that I've done in the past month is so much better than what I was doing the previous month. And I think that's more important to me than someone giving me a pin or a little ribbon or a little logo to throw on my website.
Yes. And I think competing with yourself is much better than trying to compete with others. And I think because everyone has such a unique voice, and that unique voice is so good, like just trying to be better than
the other
guy.
That's the problem with attempting to win all the time these awards is eventually we're gonna these awards create like this mean.
Yeah, everyone's the same.
Everyone's the same. And if you scoff that, who cares what anyone else thinks, then you can create something truly unique.
And with that, actually, I quickly added one last thing, Jaren, to our list.
Along
with what we've just been saying right now, there's this little spoof video, but I think it is fantastic. And I saw this And I really like this video. And it's basically a little motivational talk Shia LaBeouf has done. And somebody edited it to make it look like a TED Talk. But you know what? It is a minute and 18 seconds. I think we can, hopefully we can just add it to the end of our podcast. Because it's
like
no
the, you want the
rights.
Audio in there? I can just throw the audio
Throw the audio in there. And then this way, this is your inspiration for this episode. And with that, well, see, insert it now.
That's it. Bloop, bloop. Tell you what, here's what we'll do.
I should give more
we'll intro. Say thanks for joining us. We'll do all our intros, and then we'll end with Shia. So thanks, guys, for joining us. If you got any comments or questions, you can reach us on Twitter at Rewrap Podcast and always at resourcemagonline.com. If you like what you hear, what should they do, Kerminder, if they like this podcast?
Rate us on iTunes, please.
Exactly. And subscribe. Send us some Twitter love, which we've been getting lately.
Yes.
And tell your friends to give us a listen. We would really appreciate it. I'm at Jaren Schneider. He's at Kerminder. This has been the Rewrap Podcast. And to end the show, we'll throw it to Shia LaBeouf.
Take it away.
Do it! Just do it! Don't let your dreams be dreams. Yesterday, you said tomorrow. So just do it! Make your dreams come true! Just do it! Some people dream of success while you're gonna wake up and work hard at it. Nothing is impossible! You should get to the point where anyone else would quit, and you're not gonna stop there. No, what are you waiting for? Do it! Just do it! Yes, you can! Just do it! If you're tired of starting over, stop giving up.